Law Design Podcast, Episode 1, Dealing with Pushy Clients.
All right, everybody, this is Danny Outlaw with the official first episode of the Outlaw Design Podcast, and I'm here today with Andrew Lindstrom, our regular panelist member, designer and all-around cool guy, and our guest panelist today is Nikki Brown, and you probably know her from her blog, Design-O-Blog, and on today's show, we're going to talk a little bit about how to deal with pushy clients, bad clients, and how you can deal with them. And when I say pretty much expect you to start from scratch again and just come up with a whole new design over and over and over again.
I've never run into that, but I guess like I've seen it in like people's estimates and contracts that they'll come up with a predefined number of designs, and then they have like a limit on revisions. And I guess it's up to the designer how they define, you know, like major or minor revisions. But I would say that putting a clause in a contract like that and saying that anything after that would be like billed hourly would be a good way to, you know, get clients to either like articulate what they do want or what they don't like about things. Because, you know, after a certain point, they will be paying hourly. And, you know, if they want to keep going over and over and over that kind of stuff, they could pay for it. But, you know.
What about you, Andrew? Have you ever had anybody like that before?
Thankfully, no, that sounds horrible. No, I've never had, but I mean, obviously you have people who, you know, they want changes, but yeah, like if they, I would hope they can tell you if they don't like it, there must be a reason, right? And you might have, like Nikki was saying, you might have to pry it out of them, but there's something about the design they're not liking, and there should be a solution, hopefully, to keep them happy. And yeah, they just might not like something about this. So you might even have to ask them, I've never had it happen, but you might have to ask them, maybe it's, you know, you didn't want a grungy kind of site or whatever. But yeah, I guess, again, back to communication. But yeah, hopefully that would never happen, because that doesn't sound fun.
Yeah, well, it's definitely not fun. Apparently I'm the only one that's had that happen.
What did you do when that happened to you?
Well, it wasn't necessarily, I don't think it was too much my fault as me not giving the client what they wanted. I think it was more so that they didn't know what they want. And so, you know, I think they just thought I was at their beck and call to just keep designing until they found something that they liked, because, you know, they told me what they want. I would design it. I would show it to them. They would love it. And then like 3 hours later, they would Skype me and change their mind that wasn't what they wanted anymore. And so, you know, I kept doing it for a while, and then I eventually just told them, look, I can't do this anymore. I'm not going to do it anymore unless you want to pay for every little change that I'm going to make. Which kind of brings me to the question I was going to ask next, which is, you know, when that sort of thing happens, I guess it's never happened to the two of you, but if it were to happen, you know, at what point would you say, enough is enough, that I'm not going to do it anymore? You know, how would you handle that if they just continually ask for things that they were not necessarily out of the scope of the project, but kept on asking for changes, and you realize that the two of you, yourself and the client, were just never really going to be on the same page? You know, how would you handle that? Would you give them a refund? Would you tell them that, you know, we just can't work together anymore? Would you refer them to somebody else? How would you handle that sort of thing?
Andrew? I'd probably... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Sorry. well, if you... If they're not happy with it and you're not happy with them, I mean, normally in that situation, I guess I would probably pretty reluctant to give back a deposit. But maybe I'd be, you know, you might have to sever the cord and just kind of stop right there. And, you know, if that's okay with, like, you know, how I was saying earlier with the large client who didn't like my work, they at least let me keep my upfront deposit. So there was actually no real hard feelings in that sense. Like, I got paid for the time I did. So that's important. But, I would hope that you can come to some sort of agreement if it's just simply not going to work, that, you know, you do deserve to be paid for the work you've done. They did come to you in the first place.
And what were you going to say, Nikki?
Like I said, I would never... I would probably keep the deposit, like Andrew said, but I would just try to be, like, as, you know, polite and trying to make it not personal. I mean, just say that maybe, like, we don't work together business-wise and, you know, try to politely sever ties with the client, but be as professional about it as possible. I mean, you don't want to burn bridges, so you never know when that's going to come back and bite you in the ass.
Yeah. Totally. Now, would you, with a client like that, would you recommend them to somebody else or just kind of cut your ties altogether with them?
I'd probably recommend him to a friend, but I would probably talk to the friend beforehand and ask if it was okay to recommend a client like that. I've actually had someone give a client that they couldn't deal with to me, and I ended up being able to work better with the client. So, I mean, you never know. It might just be, like, a personality thing, or just maybe just, like, visual taste, or people, I mean, different freelancers or agencies or whatever, I mean, work in different ways, and some people might be better suited for some clients and some for others, so.
Yeah. So, I guess the final question is how to handle clients that don't want to pay. And, you know, I guess first we should talk about how you handle payments. Do you do upfront payments, or like 50-50, or milestone payments, or how do you handle your payment structure based on clients? Andrew?
I'll go first. Okay. yeah, I do, you know, smaller projects probably 50-50, and then if it's a larger project, yeah, milestones are usually... they work well for everybody, and they keep me in check too.
What about you, Nikki?
I usually get a 50% deposit. I haven't had anything big enough where the client didn't want to pay that much up front. And I usually just take payments through PayPal, which is probably just the easiest, you know, easiest way to do it, quick and easy. So,
all right. So let's say you get your 50% deposit, you do the work, and you keep talking to the client all the way during the process, and they just keep telling you yes and going forward with the project, and you get everything done, coded, designed, whatever, and you're ready to deliver the files, and the client decides that, you know, they don't have enough money to finish paying for the project, or they change their mind, or they went with somebody else, you know, what do you do at that point in time, Nikki?
I actually just had, about a month ago, a client for a small job that didn't end up paying, and I was stupid enough not to get a deposit up front because it was only like a couple $100. So, I don't know, I was actually working through another person, like a project manager, and so, like, I didn't really have any direct contact with the client, so... I'm kind of clueless as to do, like, what when a client doesn't pay. Like, I took the files off my server, so they don't have, like, their coded files anymore. So I don't know if they kept them or took them or what, but I took the stuff that I did down. So I guess that's the only thing that I could do to protect myself in that situation, other than, you know, getting a deposit in the first place, which I didn't.
Did have you ever checked to see if they used what you did?
I didn't really know exactly what specific website it was for. It was like a template for like a reptile thing. So
gotcha.
Like a buying and selling reptiles online. So I didn't know like the specific website. So I don't know if they're actually using it, but I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it's not like I can take them to court because it's, you know, wasn't that much money and it's probably not worth it in the first place. But I don't know. I mean, I could send a hitman after him, but I don't know the guy's name. So.
Yeah, but that's just even more money that you got.
True, yeah. It's probably not worth a couple $100. So.
Yeah.
Make a website for the hitman, and maybe you can work something out.
Yeah.
No, it's funny, Nikki. I literally am going through that, too. The one time I never took a deposit, of course, I'm pretty sure I got scammed. The guys stopped contacting me. But the thing about this situation is I met the guy in person. I actually have a contract with the guy. and I have his business address and phone number and everything. It's just not getting back to me. And I'm actually, it's only like exactly like Nikki's project. It was only for a few hundred dollars. So I'm at the point of trying to decide how far I want to take it, you know, because you do feel kind of burned when that happens. And, you know, it's the principle of the matter, you know, even if you could take him to small claims court or something and break even just to make sure he wouldn't do it again, would it almost seems like it'd be worth it. But then that's how much of your life and stress that you might not need to. So I'm trying to.
Yeah, you just gotta learn to like let some things go and like go. Learn from your mistakes and you know.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, always take a deposit is a good lesson from that.
Yeah, always get a deposit.
Yeah.
No matter if you really 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 trust the person, like always get a deposit.
Right.
Yeah, I'd say the deposit and contract are key, but the best thing that I ever heard. Advice-wise, as far as that sort of thing goes, was I think it was actually on like the very first Freelance Switch podcast, maybe, where Cyan was talking about she had a client and it was similar circumstances where they finished everything and I think she might have already turned the files over to the client before getting the final payment. I'm not sure, but her advice was pretty much to just kill them with kindness, where she decided that, you know, after a certain point, rather than, you know, trying to take them to court or just get really mad and call them and yell and cuss at them and stuff, that she called them like two or three times every day and was just like super duper nice, like annoyingly nice when she called every time, just telling them, you know, that we finished this work, you still owe us money, blah, blah, blah. And she just did that over and over and over again for a couple weeks. And eventually they paid her, obviously, to probably just to get her to go away so she would stop calling. But I never had to do that, but it seems like a good idea.
I might try that.
Sounds like it's effective.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could cool. Start a killing them with kindness debt collection company for freelancers. So I guess that's pretty much it for as far as dealing with bad clients. Before we wrap up the show with product recommendations, I want to start something new on the podcast where we do kind of a little Q&A with readers of the blog and on Twitter and stuff. And today's question comes from, and I'm sorry if I mispronounce your name because I don't know what it says, but it looks like Bogo Paternity. And his question is, I have one major client that provides about 90% or more of my work and monthly pay. And I'm just wondering, how do you break the reliance without harming the relationship? And I'm not entirely sure if I understand your question completely, but it sounds like you maybe want to stop doing so much work for them because you want to be able to branch out and take on other clients. So I guess that's how I'm going to go ahead and interpret the question and answer it. What I would have to say, you know, one thing that you could try first before getting rid of that client altogether is maybe, you know, maybe you have a friend that you trust to outsource some of the work. And, you know, that way you could still keep doing everything that they asked for. But as far as your personal schedule goes, you know, you could only be doing, say, 50% of what they ask you to, and then outsourcing the other 50% to somebody that you work with or somebody that you trust as far as their design skills or whatever go. But if that's not an option, I don't know. I mean, I guess the only thing that you really could do is tell them, you know, that you can't handle that workload anymore and ask them, you know, if there's any way that you could do less work for them, but still do the regular amount of work. I don't know. Do you have any ideas, Nikki?
I would, before, you know, even talking to the client about it, I would probably, you know, go out and network and drum up some other work so that you would have something to fall back on. But then I would just be honest with the client and say, like, hey, like, you know, in terms of, like, you know, being a stable freelancer, like, you can't just rely on one person. And so, you know, say you have other clients and that, you know, you might have to be more selective with the work. And I would just be honest with them. I mean, people know that you have to diversify to be able to stay in business. So that's something that we've run into at my day job at Brunello Creative. One of our main clients is Men's Health Magazine, but, you know, we also have a lot of other stuff, and we've been really working on, you know, getting a bunch of other clients just besides, you know, one major client. So just in case, like, you know, something happens with the economy or whatever, like, you just spread yourself wide and, you know, take advantage of all that stuff.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a good point to make, one that I didn't really think of, that, you know, like you said, having that one client that pays the majority of your bills is nice, but you got to remember that they could just up and disappear at any given moment. So, I mean, I don't know if that's why he wants to kind of cut the cord here with this client, but if it's not, it's definitely a good reason to think about finding a way to not rely on them so much and be able to work for them so that they kind of have that good steady income from them, but also be able to go and find other work so that if and when that client decides to up and leave, they're not just kind of shit out of luck, that they still have work to keep income coming in. What do you think, Andrew?
Yeah, definitely not having all your eggs in one basket is probably how you have to survive as a freelancer, just because you never know what can happen. But yeah, I like your idea of trying to find someone else to kind of maybe help them out with the workload. I never considered that. That would be good. And maybe even pitching that to them, like yourself as a team, and seeing if maybe they'd be open. If you vouch for this designer and here are some examples of this designer's work, they might be more than happy with that. It might even be might lead to more work for the two of you. So it's something to think about. But that's probably very smart of him not to want to rely on one person for his sole income as a freelancer.
All right.
Yeah, I would almost question if you're solely working for one client. Like, are you really a freelancer, or are you kind of like their, you know, kind of in house but not on location designer?
Yeah,
you know,
true.
I think the whole point to, like, people going the freelance route is for them to, like, pick and choose what they want. And if you're just doing stuff for one client, then, you know, you're not really getting to pick and choose. So,
yeah, that's true. All right. So I guess we'll wrap up the show here. And what we like to do at the end is everybody just kind of suggests a product or website or app or something that they want to share with the rest of the freelance community. I'll go ahead and start, and my suggestion is the Things app, which is only Mac or iPhone related right now, and have to admit that I had eyeballed this app for a really, really long time, but couldn't get it until recently when I switched from PC to Mac, and honestly, I really don't know what I would do without it now. It's really, all it is kind of like a getting things done app. It's just like a to-do list, but follows the, like, the whole getting things done mentality, like from the book. If you've ever read the Getting Things Done book by David Allen, it just follows that whole principle of how to organize things and everything. And I mean, I'm pretty much in love with it, and I'm just finishing up the free trial right now, so if the guys at Culture Code are listening to this and, you know, want to give me a free license, that would be cool too. But yeah, it's really awesome, and I mean, from day one, it definitely improved the amount of things that I got done in a day, and just relieving my stress level from trying to remember everything that I had to do today, this week, next month, and everything. So if you're into the whole getting things done and are on a Mac, I would definitely suggest the Things app. And the app for your iPhone will sync over your wireless network, so that's pretty handy too. So what would be your recommendation, Andrew?
I'm going to recommend Mosey, mosey.com, which is like anyone who is listening to this probably works a lot on their computer, and it's an issue to back up all the time. I'm always trying to keep everything backed up on the external drive, but you can't protect yourself from things like theft or fire. Or anyone working on a laptop, I'd imagine this would be great for too. And essentially, it's just keeping your backup in the cloud, like online. And what it is just a little app that they installs on your system, and it's great because it monitors when you're not using your computer, and then takes that opportunity to just back up whatever folders, like your project folders, that it's always good to have backed up. And I've been using it for a few weeks. I'm using their free. They give you 2 gigs of backup for free, which has been more than enough for my projects. And it's just a great peace of mind not to have to worry about that. Like, one less thing to worry about, basically. But I highly recommend it.
I'm going to have to second that, too, because I've been using them for a couple months, maybe even a year now. And one thing that you should point out is that they're ridiculously cheap. It's like, I think it's like $5 or something, $5 a month. Regardless of how much you store and use, it's only that $5 a month is only good for one computer. So, you know, if you work on a desktop and a laptop, it's going to cost a little bit more. You can pay for like a family plan or something, but it's really cool. I use it for project files, and then like I buy a lot of stock photography and graphics and things like that. I used it to back up those files too, so that if, you know, something happened, laptop crashes, gets stolen, computer burns to the ground, bursts into flames or whatever, that I don't have to go and rebuy hundreds of dollars worth of stock stuff. So yeah, definitely have to recommend that as well. What about you, Nikki? What would be your recommendation?
You guys are making me freak out about backups. The only thing I have going is Time Machine right now. But I'll have to look into Mosey. Yeah. I know another thing similar to that is Dropbox. I think they have a 2 gig free account too. But my recommendation would definitely be the forum service called Woofoo. I know a bit of basic PHP, so I don't know why I freak out about this, but I hate making contact forms or forms of any kind, which is actually what I'm doing in my day job right now. I'm programming a multiple-page form, but I get really lazy, and I just like to, you know, I have like a basic Woofoo account, and it's just an online form builder that makes it real easy to make forms and like email notifications, and you know, people can upload files. And a lot of times when I do like these kind of community related blog posts, when I ask people to submit things or upload files, I use Woofoo for that, and it just makes my life 100 times easier. I can't say enough good things about that company. At my previous day job, I had to do a lot of form stuff with like class registration and things like that, and since it was a small medical school, I could use the Woofoo forms for their like class registration. So that company and that form service definitely saved my ass more than a time or two. So and I mean, it's a cool company. Like they need, their favorite bands are like the Foo Fighters and the Wu-Tang Clan, and so that's what they named their company after. I mean, how awesome is that?
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's funny.
Great branding.
I've used them too. I have a paid account with them. But they're really good. I mean, like you said, just doing forms is pretty much just a pain in the ass, period, and they make it super simple to do. The only thing that I didn't like about them is the alert service is kind of annoying to me. It doesn't seem to always work, and it seems silly to me that by default it doesn't automatically email you when people fill out your form. Like, so if you never used Woofoo before, basically you go in there and create a form, and by default it sends all of the form inquiries or whatever to your Woofoo account, and you would have to actually go into your Woofoo account you know, daily to see if anybody had filled out your form. I mean, it's easy enough to change the alerts to email you every time somebody fills out the form, but I don't know. I always found that annoying about them that it doesn't do that by default. But yeah, other than that, it's definitely a good service. I have to recommend that as well.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. All right. I guess that's it for this month's Outlaw Design podcast. I'll go ahead and put anything that we talked about, you know, the products and any other links in the show notes. So if you guys want to check out anything we talked about, just check out the show notes.